Good afternoon. Can you guys hear me? Okay, great. My name is Alejandra Mijares, and I work with Apt Associates. I'm a senior analyst. I received my MPH from Emory University. And I just want to take the time to acknowledge my co-author and co-PI, Laura Salazar, and my other colleagues, Nicole Pitts and Rachel Wentlitz. So I have no relationships to disclose. So we're going to start a little bit with some background on HIV. So when we look at HIV and we look at new infections among African-American women, we find that 87% of new infections are attributed to heterosexual contact, and African-American women comprise 64% of new infections among women. Specifically in Georgia, we find that African-Americans account for 31% of the population, yet they make up 77% of new infections. New infections in Atlanta, we found that, or previous research has found that they occur among a group of inner city census tracts in the Atlanta metropolitan area. So that suggests that the epidemic is clustered in specific areas. In terms of intimate partner violence, the National Intimate Partner Violence and Sexual Violence Survey has found that 35% of women in the United States have experienced intimate partner violence in their lifetime, and 43% of them are African American women. I'm going to refer to intimate partner violence as IPV. Now, several studies have been conducted in the US that have established significant associations between intimate partner violence and HIV-related risk behaviors. So for instance, the rate of intimate partner violence among HIV-positive women was double the national rate, and women who experience IPV have over 3 times the risk to be diagnosed with HIV. Women who experience IPV are more likely to report HIV-related risk behaviors, such as having multiple partners or lack of condom use. There are 3 mechanisms or explanations that have been theorized to explain the link between IPV and HIV. Forced sex with an infected partner, negative coping strategies in response to IPV, and constrained negotiation of condom use or safer sex. We're going to be focusing on the second. Now, when you look at the risk factors for IPV, there can be relational factors, personal factors, community factors, or societal. Our study focuses on relational and personal factors. So relational factors, they can be fear of condom negotiation, low power in the relationship. And personal factors can include age, substance abuse, shame, and fear. Now, few studies have really looked at the role of shame in IPV and how it affects women's ability to speak up. Oatman and colleagues conducted a qualitative study with Malaysian women, and in which they found that some of the following internal barriers to disclosure. Cultural value placed on privacy, upholding traditional gender roles, self-blame and shame, and intense fear for further abuse. Now, I just want to pause here to talk about the difference between stigma and shame. When we think about stigma, it's actually socially constructed. It's an experience of blame, exclusion, or rejection from society, from other people around us. And shame, it's more of an internal construct. It's an emotional response. It's us blaming ourselves, us judging ourselves. So the purpose of our study was to identify individual and relational factors that may increase risk for HIV in women who experience IPV. In terms of our methods, women, their participant eligibility was 18 years and older, Black African-American women who had experienced IPV in the previous 12 months, vaginal sex in the previous 12 months, and who had resided in a high-risk area in Atlanta. Now, high-risk area was defined as people who lived in a census tract that had higher probability of HIV infection. Recruitment venues was one community-based organization and two libraries located in high-risk areas. Data collection, we had an ACASI survey that measured psychological factors, relational factors, and risk behaviors, qualitative interviews, and testing for three non-viral STIs. Analysis was conducted, it was qualitative analysis of transcripts. Codebook was developed and was coded by three analysts with a kappa of 0.77. And quantitative analysis consisted of descriptive statistics and statistics of laboratory data. Now, in our study, the idea was to triangulate data or triangulate our analysis. And when you triangulate, you do it for confirmation and for completeness. So ultimately, you're trying to confirm your results with multiple data sources to help overcome bias. And for completeness, to study a phenomenon from multiple perspectives. So just to have a more complete interpretation. So that's what we attempted. And in terms of our results, we will be using quotes to illustrate qualitative interviews. All quotes were given a pseudonym to protect participants' privacy, and pictures were from iStock. So our demographics. Our sample was 48 African-American women with a mean age of 31. 47.9% did not complete high school. 52% were single. 27% were married and living with a partner. In terms of income source, 43% had a job and 18.8% depended on a husband or boyfriend. Now, we wanted to know what was the role of cover-up in the pathway of HIV and HIV risk. So really what led these women to cover up the abuse they experienced and how this affected their risk to HIV. So I'm going to walk through this model. So when we looked at our qualitative data a bit deeper, we really found that two themes emerged that were shame and fear. So it was shame and fear, shame of intimate partner violence, of the beatings, of being talked down to, of not being able to leave. And then Leah describes shame as an emotion that impairs individuals' ability to cope. It undermines their positive self-concept. It damages their connections to others and results in diminished sense of power and control. So here's an example for our qualitative study data. I mean, why would you be with somebody who does those types of things to you? Fear. Fear can be paralyzing, especially if you fear for your life. And when we are scared for our lives, we're not really thinking about protective behaviors long term. We're really thinking about protecting ourselves today, this moment, tomorrow. And so here's an example. I felt like if I did tell somebody that he would really, really hurt me or kill me. In our sample, we also found that participants did not engage their partners in condom negotiation because they feared retaliation and they feared that he would think that she was cheating. We didn't use a condom all this time, so why start now? He'd probably get mad, probably say, oh, you must be cheating on me, or something. Now, fear, the pathway tells us that fear and shame leads us to cover-up. And cover-up was analyzed with both quantitative and qualitative data. So our descriptive analysis showed that 62% of our sample covered up the abuse, 30% feared condom negotiation, 63% perceived low relationship power. qualitative data. Here's two examples. I felt embarrassed. God, that was the most embarrassing. I always had a lie before I even got to work. I already knew what lie I wanted to tell everybody. Whether it was I was in a car accident or I fell down the stairs or something, I always had a story to tell. It was embarrassing. If people asked me what happened, I was just like, oh, it's nothing. Because I didn't really want to tell any of my friends anything. So this cover-up leads to isolations. And in our model, we show two types of isolation. The first one is when a woman covers up the abuse and avoids their family or friends and lie about their injuries. The second one is as a direct result of IPV, in which a perpetrator controls and isolates his victim. They say I've distanced myself from them since I've been involved with him. It's just easier that way. Now, what we see is that the more they cover up, the more isolated they are. If women are now isolated, they experience low social support. If they're not telling anybody about their abuse, they may engage in more negative coping strategies, such as substance abuse and risky sex, and intervention is less likely. And again, we're going to use our quantitative data to illustrate HIV risk. So 79% of our sample reported unprotected sex, unprotected vaginal sex. 22% of our sample reported anal sex in the previous 6 months, and 63% did not use a condom during that time. As I mentioned earlier, 62% of our sample covered up the abuse, 30% feared condom negotiation, 73% reported unprotected vaginal sex, and of them also 30% used illicit drugs in the previous 30 days. Of the whole sample tested positive for a non-viral STI, and of those, 73% covered up the abuse. Shame, and so in conclusion, shame and fear are associated with experiencing IPV. Cover-up of IPV places women at increased risk for HIV. Cover-up may increase isolation and affect help-seeking behaviors, making intervention less likely. And cover-up and isolation may contribute to an increase in negative coping strategies. Interventions aimed at reducing HIV infection among women should address IPV, address shame and fear, reduce victim blaming, and allow women to feel more comfortable, and address stigma surrounding IPV. Now, anybody that's worked in intimate partner violence has seen this phrase, break the silence, stop the violence. It's very easy to judge and say she should just speak up. I'm going to ask you to think about something that you've experienced that was shameful, that you feared, and ask yourself, how many people did you tell? 1, 2, 3? No one? So we must really work to reduce victim blaming surrounding IPV so we can break this pathway. Our limitations: cross-sectional data, small sample size, descriptive statistics, self-report data for ACASI, and our interviews. Thank you.